not really any pressure. Irishus. I would like, this wasn't really part of the program officially, I guess. My grandmother, Sara Basleya, is heading into surgery in just a couple of hours. So if it's okay, we could dedicate this year to her. She should have a push in her episode, Sharchali Yisrael. Just one very quick thing about my grandmother. She's like one of the most special people in the world to me. She became a balas tshuva at 70 years old. She's the only religious person in her complex. She wears skirts. She keeps Shabbos. It's an unbelievable thing. We talk about inspiration. This is my grandmother. It's real. It's incredible. Okay, so Grandma, this is for you. We know that Parshas Nitzavim is always read before Rosh Hashanah. It's a difficult Parsha, Chazal say. A lot of klalos. So Chazal say we always read it before Rosh Hashanah. Let's get it out of the way. Let's get all the klalos out of the way. I don't want to think about those things in the new year. It's reasonable. And then just this past week, Parshas Vayelech, we read, perhaps, the most frightening pasuk in the entire Torah. That's the pasuk of, Anochi Hasdar Asdar Aspanei Bayom Ahu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to hide myself. And if you look, and you should, in the Ramchal, and Derech Hashem, and in Das Tfunos, explains that really all the things that happen in the world, all those cries from Klal Yisrael over the course of history, are because of this pasuk. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a plan to hide himself in the Bria and only to reveal himself at the end of days. And that's where pain comes from, and that's where sorrow comes from. In fact, the Medrash says that there was no more difficult day in the creation of the world than on the day that the Rebbeinu Shalom put that pasuk in the Torah. That was, without a doubt, the most difficult day. That was Yom Kasha. That was the hardest day. And so Rav Pinkus asks, and though I'm going in a different direction than Rav Pinkus, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, it's important to note that it's his question. Why in the world can Parshas V'yelech be read after Rosh Hashanah? Who wants to read such frightening things? As I once heard a story from Rav Moshe Weinberger about a certain Rebbe, that he said to his Hasidim, he had a tefillah to the Rebbeinu Shalom, don't scare Jews. And yet, this is the most frightening possible. Could there be more of a frightening thing than finding yourself in pain and having nowhere to turn because the Rebbeinu Shalom has hidden himself? This is the mentality that I need to go into Yom Kippur with. What a scary thought. And I thought perhaps to answer that question as follows. It's a hergish that I just had last week. I'm sharing it with you. It's the first time I've said this hergish publicly. It's Gemara. Angsuvas daf beis amid beis. The Gemara relates a story, a Maisa Shahaya, it actually happened, about a man that he was going away. He didn't want his wife to be an aguna in case he didn't return. He didn't want her to be stuck. So he gave her a get, al tnai, that he doesn't come back within 30 days. He gave her a get. And 30 days later, he shows up on the banks of the river, and she's on one side of the river, and he's on the other side of the river, and Rashi says the ferry is on her side. And by the time the ferry will get to his side and bring him back, it'll already be the 31st day. And he's screaming. Picture the scene in your head. Chazi da'asa, look at me, I'm here. What a powerful scene. What's the halach? So none other than Shmuel himself paskened this halacha, and he said, she's divorced. That's not called coming back. Girls, I ask you, how big is a river? It was big. big enough that he couldn't cross it in a small amount of time. But we're not talking about an ocean. We're talking about a river. He was on one side screaming, Chazidasa, Chazidasa. Obviously he was screaming because they were within some distance of each other. How could Shmuel, you'll forgive me for using this lashon, I don't mean it. How could Shmuel be so cruel? That's a paskin, that the get is taikif. What a terribly cruel halacha. And I believe that the answer lies in the following mashal. Today we live in a sophisticated world with trains. Not so much here in Yerushalayim, but in the rest of the world, what happens when you're coming to a train crossing? So they have guards that come down and red lights that say, be careful, there's a train coming. Here in Eretz Yisrael, policy seems to be a little bit looser. It's like, I don't know. I'm not sure exactly why they have it this way. It's one of the nisim of having a multi-billion-dollar train system in Yerushalayim. They don't think that we need those. Okay, anyway. So what did they used to do? They used to have, by these train crossings, they used to hire somebody whose job it was to stand by the train crossing every time that a train was supposed to come. And there was one man that he was working at this train crossing for many, many years. And one time, there was a terrible accident. A wagon went over the train crossing as the train was coming, killed the wagon driver. And they brought this crossing guard in front of a bezdin, they brought him in front of a tribunal to see what happened, and they started grilling him. Tell us your story, where were you? So he said, I was in bed. And my wife woke me up at 3 o'clock in the morning. The train was scheduled to come for 3:30. And they said to him, and what did you do at that point? Well, it was cold outside, so I got on my boots, and I got on my big jacket, and I walked down to the spot where I'm supposed to stand. And they said, what time did you get to that spot? He said, I got there at 3:15, and I was waiting to see if any wagons were coming. No wagons were coming. And finally, at around 3:28, I saw a wagon coming in the distance. And he said, what'd you do at that time? So I did what I always do. I took my lantern, I started waving it back and forth to warn him that a train was coming, this is not a safe time to cross. But he still continued. The wagon driver still continued. He said he continued and he continued. And then there was the tragedy. And they acquitted him. He did his job. He came home and his wife saw that he was so depressed. And she said to him, what's the matter? You were acquitted. So he said, they never asked me if the lantern was lit. They only asked me if I shook the lantern. How many of us find ourselves in that situation? Where here we are, Erev Yom Kippur, and we're swinging that lantern, we're crying out to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, as the Rabbeinu Yonah in Shari Tshuva writes, and the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva writes, we're crying out in the classic way that Klal Yisrael has been crying out for so many years. We're waving that lantern. But is the lantern really lit? Is it just something we're screaming? Is it just words? Or has it penetrated our core? And with this mashal, I think we can answer this Gemara. You see, the relationship between a mother and a daughter, between a father and a son, it doesn't matter. One party could be on one continent, the child could be on the other continent, and that's still called that they have a relationship. But if chas v'shalom, you enter into a situation in a marriage where one party sees, the husband or the wife sees, that there's an insurmountable gap, there's a river that can't be overcome, that's not called coming back. That's not called a marriage. If one party is sitting there and he's screaming, Chazi da'asa, Chazi da'asa, I'm back, but in his heart he feels like he's not really back. He feels like there's this insurmountable gap between he and his wife. Shmuel Paskins, that's not called back. And we know that the relationship between Klal Yisrael and the Rabbeinu Shel Olam has many different facets. Avinu, no doubt, we will always be HaKadosh Baruch Hu's children. Malkeinu, no doubt, We were created to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. But the relationship between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in its deepest, in its most penetrating form, is the relationship between a husband and a wife. And if we are sitting here crying out before Yom Kippur, but we are lacking that fire, we see it as an insurmountable gap, then a person has not done proper tshuva. And the question that I want to pose to you today, we'll deal with it from two different perspectives, is why do we feel that way? And I include myself in this. Because I can't tell you how many times I've felt in my life, and I imagine that you have felt the same way. I can't tell you how many times in my life I felt that the Ribbono Shel Olam was over there and I'm over here, and it's too difficult. It's too difficult. All sorts of tragedies, pain, suffering in the world. You look around, it's not hard to feel that gap. The gap is, it's here. We live with that gap. And I'd like to humbly suggest that that gap exists for two reasons. One, because we think that we created that gap. And two, because we think that the Ribbono Shel Olam pushed us away. So we'll deal with the first. We think that the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't want us anymore because of what we've done. There's a very strange halacha that I want to share with you. It's brought down by the Rambam. The Rambam says that when a person is doing his tshuva, so the Yodea Talumos, the Ribbono Shel Olam, the knower of all hidden things, has to testify that we will never do that chet again. What a terrifying halacha. As if to say that in 6 months from now, when I do that terrible halacha again, I do that terrible aveira, I somehow ended up in a strange place, a ruach shtus came into my brain and I don't know what happened, I did that thing, and I'm not proud of it. But you're telling me now that retroactively, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that I was going to do that aveira, are you telling me that I never did tshuva? Who amongst us can have ever done tshuva if that's the case? And I heard from my Rebbe, Rav Eli Margolius, and Ramat Beit Shemesh, he shared with me an idea this past Shabbos. Blew my mind. It doesn't call HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Rambam does not refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu here as Yodea HaAsidin, the one who knows what's going to be in the future. He calls him HaYodea HaTalumos, the one who knows what's going on in the deepest, most inner recesses of our heart. Which means to say that of course we're going to do that Aveira again. The Ribbono Shel Olam created us as human. Of course we're going to make mistakes. But right now when I'm doing that tshuva, right now when I'm being mischaret, right now, what do I really want? What's in the deepest, most inner recesses of my heart? My heart is screaming to the Ribbono Shel Olam, you know I don't want this. You know this is not what's important to me. There's a halacha that if a person has two shofaros, one inside of the other, if you hear the kol hapnimi, if you hear the song of the shofar, the inner shofar, then you're yotzei, but if you hear the outer shofar, you're not yotzei. The Dovev Meisharim, Rabbi Yedidya's grandfather, writes an unbelievable thing. On Rosh Hashanah, in this man of tshuva, we need to hear the kol hapnimi of a Jew. It's not the external kol of chazid to also look, I'm back. It's the fire. It's the bren. It's the passion. I saw a phrase from Rav Freifeld, Zecher Tzadik Lechavracha, the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Shar Yashiv. I'm telling you, when I saw this, I was jumping for joy. He talks about dehydrated Judaism. Dehydrated Judaism. What a beautiful lashon. As if to say, Be'etzem Yiddishkeit is hydrated. Be'etzem it's something to be excited about. It's something to daven. It's something to be so passionate about. But Nebuch, we've created a situation where it's dehydrated. Where we've lost that passion and that feeling. And it's become intellectual on one hand. And on the other hand, Chas V'Shalom, it's become an all. It's become a tirda. It's become a burden for us. Dehydrated Judaism. The Ribbono Shel Olam does not need dehydrated Judaism, like the Navi in Yeshaya says, Lama li roiv zivchechem? Do I need your karbanos? Do I need your dry karbanos? No, I need the heart. Rachmana liba boy. And girls, the deepest recesses of a person's heart cry out for one thing and one thing only. I want to come back to the Ribbono Shel Olam. I feel, and we'll discuss in a minute why, I feel like you're over there and I'm over here. But the truth of the matter is, we're right there with the Ribbono Shel Olam. So Rashi and Sota, one of my Talmidim, showed it to me today. I couldn't believe I saw this. Rashi was Nair Nairais, Memam Nalf. Rashi says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put inside, Rashi wasn't a poet, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu put inside of every single Jew the ability in their heart to be davik to Him. We sing in Shabbos Miros, Ki kel yitein l'chol boi devekin. And Pashtus, what does that mean? It means that to everyone who's davik, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them everything. But Rav Moshe Kapriner says, no, that's not what it means. It means, Ki kel yitein l'chol boi devekin, like Rashi says, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put inside of all of our hearts the ability to be davik, the ratzon to be davik to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what we want, and nothing else. And that's why you could look around here in Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, and you could find people living in small two-bedroom apartments with 10 kids and no food. And they're the happiest people in the entire world. I want to share with you something that happened to me 15 years ago. 15 years ago, I came to daven in Karlin Stollen. Karlin Stollen is famous for their davening. They scream every word of davening. So beautiful. And it was known that if you just show up, somebody's going to invite you to their house. As soon as I came, somebody came over. The gabbai said to me, where can we send you? I said, somebody who speaks English. You know, my Yiddish is not as good as maybe it should be. You know, I just want somebody who speaks English. They found me somebody who speaks English. I came to his apartment. I can't describe to you what it was like. It was the tiniest, barest apartment. The walls hadn't been painted in years. And then he served this chicken. I'm sure his wife is an excellent cook. It was the worst food I've ever tasted in my entire life. There was not one piece that I could get that didn't have little bones in it. I was starving after the meal. And I saw, it's not like he had any better. He probably went like and took like whatever he could get, like the end of the end. But like, this guy was so besimcha. And I'm sitting to myself, I have to be careful what I say now. Where I come from, if a person lives in a two-bedroom apartment and they have 10 kids and they have this tiny little chicken, they're not so happy. And this guy was so happy. And this guy was singing Shabbos Miros, and I don't think it was a show. This guy was really living life. Why? Because he had something that was more real than all of the communities that I came from. He had Dveikus Bashem. He was living the real life. He was living the life that was in line and consonance with the most inner recesses of his heart. But you'll say to me, it's a nice drush. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what aveiras I've done. How can I come back to Him? I pushed the Ribbono Shel Olam away. I did these things. Yes, it was a ruach shtus that came into my head, but lamaisa, I did it. But you know, girls, right after the Chet HaEgel, Moshe Rabbeinu gets up and he says, Mila Hashem Elai. A person, after they do a terrible aveira, has the ability to get up and say, I'm on that side. I'm on his team. I made a mistake, but I can come back. And that's why every month has a siman to it. And the siman of the month of Elul, of the month of Tshuva, is a besula. As if to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love for us is like a besula, as the Ramban points out. But Rav Pinkus says something unbelievable. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't just love us like a besula. The pasuk says, Shuvi besulas Yisrael. And what does that mean? It means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a nes and He wiped your aveiras out. They don't exist. You're brand new. And this is not a drush. This is what the Rishonim say. The Rabbeinu Yonah writes that a person who does tshuva is like a newborn child who does not have schuyos, who does not have schuyos. You have nothing. You're totally reborn. This is not a drush. This is not a chassidish maisa. This is the way it works. The Rabbeinu Shalom says you are clean. The Rambam even goes so far as to say that the minig in Klal Yisrael was to change your name when you were doing tshuva, as if to say, that wasn't me. And yet we get so stuck in our averas, we don't really believe in the Kayach HaTshuva.
Al tachzik atzmecha l'rosha, says the Mishnah in Avos. Don't consider yourself a Rosha. And the Rambam on the spot, quoted by the Bartanura, says, because if you consider yourself a Rosha, then you're going to be given over l'tarba yisro'o l'gamre. A person, psychologically, when they do an Aveira, they think, it's over. Aveira gayreres Aveira. The Mishnah says, Bayreach mina Aveira, because Aveira gayreres Aveira. Run away from Aveiras, because one Aveira will cause the next. The first Aveira wasn't terrible. Run away from an Aveira because the first Aveira is terrible. What do I need to be worried about the second Aveira for? Because you know what's much worse than the Aveira? What's much worse than the Aveira is the feeling of yish, of giving up hope, of it's over. Two Rosh Chodesh Nisans ago, I weighed 254 pounds. I had been on many diets. Mitzvah Hashem, you'll meet my wife over Yom Kippur. She can explain to you that it wasn't her fault. She only makes the food. I choose the size of what to eat. Yeah. She makes delicious brownies. I used to eat them by the tray. Yeah, there's a famous comedian who says a serving size in Fig Newtons is 2 Newtons. He said, I eat Fig Newtons by the sleeve. Yeah, it's like... My wife makes a cake. My job is to get as much of that into me as possible, yeah? And I did all the diets, and they all work. They all work. Until what? Until the first time you cheat. And then it's out the window. Then it's out the window. And I'm telling you, girls, I'm like, you know, there's a theory with how the world was created, the Big Bang and then the Big Crunch, that the world is constantly in this balloon, expanding, contracting model. I'm an Olam Katan, you know? Like, I've just been like... It's very sweet. I have a little girl whose name is Racheli Berg. And she's mamish the sweetest kid in the world. The truth is, they all do it. My 4-year-old also does it. But every time I eat anything, they ask me, Abba, is that on your diet? I'll tell you something, girls. It's been almost a year and a half. I haven't cheated once. Why? Why? Not because I'm Shatz Tzadik. It would be nice if that was true. It would be nice if this whole thing was about Kfisha Sayetze. I'll tell you the truth. I know that the first Ragalach that I put in my mouth, it's over. I know it's over. I know the first piece of cake, and especially when we have all the boys over, and then my wife makes one of these really fancy cakes, I'm just in there, I'm like... I bought these new suits. I don't want to have to buy new suits. You know, like I'm doing every trick in the book to try to keep myself from... eating that piece of cake, because once you eat that piece of cake, it's over. That's the way we are. We think it's over. A person could put in years into their life, but the second they mess up, it's over. And it's not true. It's not true. A person has to know that maybe in the Olam HaGashmias we took one step back, but in the Olam HaRuchnias we took 2 steps forward. And that's the way we need to look at it. So that's one aspect. One aspect is we make a terrible mistake. We think we push the Rabbeinu Shalom away. But the second aspect, perhaps the more painful aspect, is that we feel that we pushed away HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every Friday night in Davening, we say, V'hoyu l'mshisa shasayich, v'rachachu kol mevalayich, yosis alayich elekayich, kimsa yischasan alkala, HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'merachik, those things that are swallowing us up. And then, Yosas Alayach Elekayach, Kimsois Chosan Alkala, then we could dance together again like Chosan Vekala. Because the truth is, girls, that when a person feels pushed away from the Rabbeinu Shalom, there is no Simchas Chosan Vekala. As long as we have a feeling of being swallowed whole by whatever it is that makes us feel swallowed whole, there's no chance in the world that we're going to be able to dance with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's no chance. And I want to tell you a very strange Gemara. Gemara in Tainus. The Gemara in Tainus says, Lo hayu yamim toivim li Yisrael ki chamisha asar ba'av v'chi yom kippur. There was no greater days in the history of Klal Yisrael than Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur. Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur. What does Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur have to do with each other? On Tu B'Av, We know that the minig was for all the girls to go out into the fields and for each one of them to shout out, look at my milas, look at my milas. This one had oisha, this one had yichus, this one had beauty. Everyone would scream out their milas. Everyone would scream out, this is what's great about me. You know what happened on Tu B'Av? On Tu B'Av, we finally came back to Beitar. You know what was in Beitar? That was the site of the end. Again, we thought that there was going to be a Mashiach at that time, Bar Kokhba rebellion. We thought Bar Kokhba was Mashiach. Even Rav Akiva himself thought Bar Kokhba was Mashiach. But it didn't work out that way. And ultimately, hundreds upon thousands of Jews were killed in Beitar. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu made an ace. The bodies did not decompose. And on that day, on Tu B'Av, we were able to get back to the bodies and to bury the bodies. Is that a day of Simcha? On that, we make a bracha, HaToyva HaMeitiv, every single day in benching. Whenever you bench, you have to make HaToyva HaMeitiv. You're remembering the Haruge Beitar. That's a zman of Simcha. That's a zman where I'm excited. Wow! Baruch Hashem, hundreds of thousands of people were killed, and their bodies didn't decompose. What in the, Tu B'Av is a terrible day. How could a person be excited on Tu B'Av? How could a person go out and make shidduchim on Tu B'Av? It's a story, it's a mashal, about a couple. Dovi and Devorah. And they're married. They love each other very much, but you know, sometimes what happens with couples, they start to fight. They enter into a situation where it's taka not so good, and the fight builds and it builds. And ultimately, she comes to him and she says to him, I think we need to get separated. Let's just take a break. Let's just take a break from each other. She says, I'm going to go back to my house. I'm going to go back to my parents. And let's see what's going in a couple of months. Let's see how things shake out. So he says to her, you know, it's a good idea. I'm going to travel the world also. I'm going to travel the world. I'm going to go around. And I guess I'll have my things and you'll have your things and it'll be great. So she goes home, and the very next week he sends her a letter from Germany. Germany is amazing, he says. The culture, the people, wow, it's unbelievable. And you know, he tells her, I met a girl. It's great, she's so amazing. And this poor girl, she's sitting there in her parents' house and she's reading this letter a week later. I thought we were just getting separated. I thought it was just a break. I didn't know we were going with other people. I never meant for this to happen. The next week he writes her a letter from Switzerland. Switzerland is beautiful. The Alps, I'm going skiing. It's incredible. And you'll never believe it. I met the greatest girl here. And she's reading this letter. She's like, her heart is breaking. What is he doing? He's traveling all over the world. He's meeting these girls. The next week she gets a letter from this place and from that place and from Russia and all over the place. What's going on over here? And her parents, you know, parents always want the best for their children, but sometimes they don't know how to do it. And they're hawking her. You got to get a divorce already. You got to get out of this. You know how much you have to get out of this. And she says, I can't take it anymore. I got to go back to my house. I can't be around my parents anymore. I got to get some clarity. And she travels back to Rome. She goes back to her house. And she gets to her house and she sees that the door is ajar. And she pushes open the door a little bit and she hears that there's some noise in the house. She thinks somebody breaking into her house, somebody robbing her stuff. And she sees that the door to the study is a little open. And she peeks in, and she sees her husband sitting there, typing on a typewriter with a whole stack of letters. And she walks in, she goes, what's going on? I thought you were in Russia, I thought you were in Brazil, I thought you were in Switzerland. So he looks at her and he goes, okay, the jig is up. I never left. How could I leave? This is the place that I love the most in the entire world. But you wanted to go so badly, and I didn't know how to get you to stay. And you were saying you were going, so I didn't want to be the loser that stayed, so I was like, okay, I'll go too. I thought you wanted your distance. I thought you wanted your break. So she goes, are you kidding me? I didn't want any of that. What did she want? Moshe Weinberger tells a story about a couple that came to him. They were having a marital crisis. And they come to the office and they sit down and he says to them, okay, who wants to go first? And the husband says, okay, I'll go first. He goes, Rebbe, I don't know what she wants with me. I'm a good husband. I'm a good guy. I take out the garbage. I change the light bulbs. I make dinner. I read the kids' books. I'm a great guy. What does she want? And the whole time that the guy is talking, she's sitting there like this. Rebbe, look at her. What's she doing right now? What's going on? So Weinberger turns to the woman and he says, what's going on? So she says to him, do you really think that I married him to take out the garbage? You think that I married him to change a light bulb? I married him because of the way he looked at me under the chuppah. Because he looked at me at some point in his life and he said, you're the most important thing to me. And so often we get stuck in these situations where there's fights and people don't know how to get out of it. What does a person really want? A person really just wants their spouse to look at them and go, you know, I care about you more than anything else in the world. You want to know an unbelievable thing that I learned? There's a guy whose name is Harville Hendricks. He's one of the gedolim in marriage therapy. He's a guy. But he has incredibly Jewish ideas. He tainas that the reason that couples fight is because we're re-experiencing crying as a little baby. A little baby, what do they want? They want something, so they cry. I want to be fed, so I cry. I want to be changed, so I cry. I want a toy, so I cry. So we get older, and we cry. It's not going so well, so we cry. We yell out, we shout out, we say things that we don't mean to say. And sometimes it's necessary. Sometimes it's necessary for people to take a break. There is such a parsha in the Torah. Of course, it's not a parsha we want, but there is such a parsha in the Torah. But the Rabbeinu Shalom says, even though we're in a matziv where we pushed each other away, even though we're in a matziv where I had to, for whatever reason, there was a tkufa in Klal Yisrael, where I had to say, okay, you go your way and I'll go my way, and I have to kill the Harugei Beitar, I have to kill them. But the Rabbeinu Shalom says to you, I know that this is not what's really going on in the depth of our relationship. In the depth of our relationship, at the innermost core, in the innermost recesses of our relationship, the Rabbeinu Shalom says, I love you. And I'm going to tell it to you, I'm going to give you a little kiss. I'm not going to let these bodies decompose. For whatever reason it has to happen, there's a hester upon him. I have to push away a little bit, says the Rabbeinu Shalom. But it's not what I want. I give you that little kiss, like Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef HaTzadik is being sold down to Mitzrayim. And he's leaving his family behind to go into slavery. Yosef, who's going to be Malchus in Klal Yisrael, is being sold to a bunch of Arabs. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends him down with spices. Why? So that it'll smell nice. You think Yosef HaTzadik cared what he smelled like? Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, no. But that's the kiss from the Rabbeinu Shlomo. That's the kiss of, I'm still with you. I'm still with you. This has to happen. It's part of a divine plan. But I'm right here with you. I want to share with you something that I heard from my Rebbe. It was a tragedy, a certain sickness in my family a couple of years ago. I one time found myself crying in my sleep. I woke up from my own tears. It was 4 o'clock in the morning. I didn't know what to do. I was all over the place. I didn't know how to deal with it. So at 4 o'clock in the morning, I called my Rebbe in America. And I said to my Rebbe as follows. I know that the Rabbeinu Shalom is with me right now. I know that the Rabbeinu Shalom is doing this. I know that Kol Man Da'avid Rachmano L'Tav Avid. I know all the shmuzin. But Rebbe, I want to know one thing. Is the Rabbeinu Shalom crying right now? Is he crying with me? My Rebbe said to me, Mordechai, that's what Chazal teach us. Chazal teach us that even when HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to push us away, he's crying. He's crying bitter tears because he does not want to do it. It's an unbelievable story that I'm sure you've all heard about Elisha ben Avuya, who was more famously known as Acher, who was a Tana, and perhaps one of the greatest Tanaim of the generation. And Elisha ben Avuya, he made, whatever it was, he went to Shemayim, whatever that means, the Rambam and Marivuchim says, he was running into the Sisrei Habriya, he was working things out, and he ended up making a terrible mistake. Somehow he came to the conclusion that there were two Rabbeinu Shaloms. It's not exactly clear what was going on over there. And a bas kol came out of Shemayim and said that Elisha ben Avuya has lost his chelek in Olam Haba. That's what happened. And so Elisha ben Avuya said, okay, if I lost my Olam Haba, I may as well go to Olam Hazeh. And he went off and he did a terrible Aveira. And he started this downward trend of, I'm falling apart. And Rav Meir, his Talmud, was always trying to pull him back. And he was saying, Rebbe, come back, come back. And they went and they spoke to all these little school children, Psoikli Psuka, tell me what pasuk you learned today, which is some sort of mystical communication with the Rebbeinu Shalom. And every single pasuk, no matter what they asked, every single pasuk was another remez. The Rebbeinu Shalom saying, Elisha ben Avuya, I don't want you. Shuvu banim shayvivim chutz me Elisha ben Avuya. I don't want your tshuva. So Elisha ben Avuya says, this Talmud Rebbe Meir, what do you want from me? The Rebbeinu Shalom is giving me a direct communication. I don't want you. Says Rabbi Nachman Mibreslov, you know, if you have a life-threatening illness and there's only one doctor in the world that could heal it, and you go to that doctor and you say, please, you have to help me, and the doctor slams the door in your face, you know what the greatest thing you could possibly do is? Knock down the door. Don't let anything stand in your way. Knock down the door. You know what Elisha ben Avuya was supposed to do when he felt pushed away from the Rebbeinu Shalom? Push back. The Rebbeinu Shalom pushes us away for a reason. And he creates this matzah for a reason where it's not clear and I can't understand. But the Rebbeinu Shalom is coming to you and he's saying, push back. Be mishabeach me. Tell me I'm the most important thing. Look at me the way we once looked at each other. Let's get back to that true, honest feeling of love that we had. Go look. Do yourselves a favor, girls. Go to a first grade classroom of a really good Rebbe. There's a Rebbe in Far Rockaway. His name is Rabbi Potash. You know how Rabbi Potash davens with his first graders? You haven't seen davening until you've seen it. He has his class jumping and dancing around the class, and it's wild. And they're singing ma ma ma, and it's unbelievable. And you should know there was one time I saw in the summer there was a Down syndrome kid in the class, and all the kids, a bunch of first graders, it was wild. A bunch of first graders just dancing with this kid in a circle. Nobody told them to. They were just dancing with this kid. Hey, he's no different than us. Maybe he looks a little different. Who cares? So what? We're davening to the Rebbeinu Shalom. That's tefillah. You gotta daven like a kid. A kid is excited to daven. A kid is not saying the words of, you know, Kenu Chatanum Fumach. Salachti kidvarecha, says the Rebbeinu Shalom. Your slich is gonna be kefi the way you say it. If you say, I don't care if you're davening like you're having a seizure. If you're going like that, that's not called tefillah. Tefillah comes from a deep place inside of you where it's just talking to Hashem in an honest way. I want to tell you a story that I just read this past Shabbos, and with this will end. It was a yeshiva called Kelm. And the Nazis came to the town of Kelm and they rounded up all the townspeople and all the Mnei Yeshiva. They knew where they were going. I knew where they were going. The Rav of the town of Kelm is holding a Sefer Torah in his arms. The Alter from Kelm's daughter couldn't walk. She was being carried on a chair. And they're walking to what they know is their certain deaths. And as they're walking and it's totally silent and it's totally quiet, one person starts singing a song. And we know the songs that they sang because in a miraculous way a couple of people were able to escape. And this person starts singing, Ashrei ha'am she'kach aloi, Ashrei ha'am she'Hashem eloikav. And everyone starts gathering in with him like it's Simchas Torah. Ashrei ha'am. And they're just dancing. They're dancing. And the Nazis didn't know what to do. Start butting them with their guns. Hey, stop it. They finished the song. It's quiet again. This person starts singing again. Ato v'chartonu mikol ha'amim. He's singing, we're the chosen nation from amongst all the nations in the world. Imagine the scene. And they're dancing. They're dancing. Nazis don't know what to do. Stop it! They finish the song. Picture the scene. And then this person screams out, and everyone starts screaming out with him. Oleinu lishabayach ladoin hakol. Start singing Aleinu from Yomim Noroim. This is not that long ago, girls. And they all went to their, what was going to be their mass grave. The Mashkiach of Kelm asked the Nazis if he could address his tzibur one last time. Negre said, "You can speak for a minute." He said to them, "Chevra, the Asura Haruge Malchus died so that everybody else in the world could live. HaKadosh Baruch Hu needed a karpon to be mischaper on Klal Yisrael for whatever reason. Today for us is that day." And with that, the Nazis shot him. And they shot the Rav of the town. And he fell in with the Sefer Torah. And then they shot everybody else. A couple of people in a miraculous way were able to escape. Today there's a big burial site there called Kever Achim. The Kever of all the brothers that were buried in that mass grave right out there in the outskirts of the town. V'anoichi Esther Esther Panay B'yom Ahu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu hid himself. So now let's go back to answer that question with everything in mind. We think that we ran away from the Rebbeinu Shalom. Nothing could be further from the truth. The Rebbeinu Shalom loves the greatest Rasha more than we love the greatest Tzaddik. We think the Rebbeinu Shalom pushed us away, and it's true, but the Rebbeinu Shalom, you should know, he pushed you away for a reason, and perhaps he pushed you away with a kiss. He gave you a message that says, "I'm doing this for a reason." And in Kelm, they were able to understand that. And the very next pasuk in the Torah, after Va'anechi Hester Hester Panah Bayamahu, is Va'ato Kisul Lachem Asashira Hazois. And that's why a Hester Panim, while it's so difficult and so painful and brings so much sadness and sorrow to our life, we can read it after Rosh Hashanah. Because after Rosh Hashanah, there's a Hischadshus. Yes, there's going to be pain, and yes, there's going to be sorrow, but Rebbeinu Shalom, you know that I can take this, and you know that you've done this for a reason, and you're trying to bring out the song that's inside of me. That atavichartanu feeling, that no matter how much you push us away, we are not going to leave, we are going to knock down that door. Yiratzim lefnei avinu shebashamayim. That tomorrow, we come back to the Rebbeinu Shalom, on the day when we got the Luchos Shnios. After HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgave us, after HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "Don't worry about the gap, I'll come to you." Yiratzim, that we should have the ability to remember, it's in our heads. It's not real. The Rebbeinu Shalom has not run away from us. The Rebbeinu Shalom loves us. And it's our job to connect to the Rebbeinu Shalom on the deepest level possible. We should have an amazing, amazing Yom Kippur experience.